This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Whānau, it's me, the Triple SD. Welcome to this Deep In Sessions. How are you? From the bone-crushing intensity of the heavy metal stage to the transcendent melodic pulse of the Australian bush, today we're descending into the studio of a producer who bridges the gap between the organic and the electronic. He's weaving whale calls into techno and turning distortion into divinity. Please welcome the architect of the deep, the one and only Aussie Badman, Cave Dweller. Cave Dweller, welcome back, my brother. It's so good to have you back. How are you?
Thank you so much, man. Look, I'm stoked to be back on the show, and I'm well, to be honest. Keen to be, you know, chatting with you again,
nice.
Shooting the shiz.
Nice, as we do. So get ready, yeah. Listeners. We're about to go quite deep. So I got some questions for you. Ready?
Absolutely.
Nice. So you started your journey into the heavy metal scene, which is often about visceral, raw aggression, but your electronic work feels deeply cinematic and even healing. Was there a specific lightning bolt moment where you realized that a synthesizer could capture a soul just as powerfully as a distorted guitar?
Yeah, look, absolutely, you're right, you know, like, for most of my music life, I was attending, you know, heavy metal shows and playing in heavy metal bands. But there was this festival happening out in the Australian bush. It was called Umeå. It doesn't exist anymore. But I kind of just, I kind of went there on a whim. The situation in which I went to this festival was a bit unusual because I just attended a funeral.
Oh.
And so, yeah, so I was kind of, you know, I was in this, you know, obviously very, like, heavy mindset. And I went to this this trance festival. But at this trance festival, there was this chill-out stage. And I saw everyone kind of huddled together, kind of like in this sort of communal sort of semicircle. And there was this, like, I guess you'd call it, like, psy-chill act happening, which was all using these synthesizers. And these people it looked as almost like they were like transcending themselves. It was like a meditative type thing, which I'd never seen before at a concert, right? Uh-huh. Like, usually people are moshing and not on the ground meditating together. So I joined them. I wish I could remember which act it was too, but instantly joining these people with this type of like psychedelic chill music, I felt what they were feeling, and I'd never felt that before. So, you know, in some ways, like, you know, there's a cathartic release with heavy metal, but I also learned that you can absolutely get that with electronic music. And I think that was the first time I'd ever actually seen that and actually felt it myself. So the lightning bolt moment would have happened at, Umeå Festival about 10 years ago.
Wow. That sounds epic. And I know that vibe, you know, the chill out room, the chill out zone, is a completely underutilized hidden space, which in my personal opinion is usually the most confronting, because you're hearing all the stuff, like, and it's layered and it's beautiful and it's designed for the atmosphere.
Yeah, and I think your word confronting is really hits at the core of it too, because you don't expect it.
No.
With, you know, being in the chill out room, but some of the most moving experiences I've had with music have almost always been in the chill out room with some act I've never heard of before, you know.
100%.
Yeah, so I'm glad we agree on it. It's underutilized.
It is underutilized. So promoters out there, just like really stack that cash and the production budget into the chill out zones. They desperately need it. Your 2026 release cycle, including the single Sand, feels like an evolution into even deeper textures. If this new album was a physical landscape people could walk into, what would it look like, and what is the one hidden room or secret sound in the project that you're most proud of?
Oh, good question. And I think it has a sort of a literal answer, because the cover art to my album Textures was taken in Alice Springs.
Nice.
So like the red heart of Australia. And my best mate has lived out there for years, and I couldn't afford to go see him until recently. And I went out there, and he took me out to these sacred places, First Nations peoples, you know, like these amazing water holes and incredible glyphs and rock art and things like that. So that was a huge inspiration to a lot of the songs on this record, including Sand. But if there was a hidden room or a secret door out there, it would be the door to my song Snow.
Nice.
So, which is kind of in the complete opposite to how the other songs feel, which is sort of this deserty textural thing. Snow, which was made using samples of snow, is kind of the complete opposite to that. So it's a nice counterpoint to those experiences. Yeah,
wow, that's
sand
really
and
cool.
Snow.
That's really cool. It's like fire and ice, it's like above and below. It's like the list goes on. There's so many allegories there that you can play with. And like, you know, I gotta say, both these tunes are absolutely stunning. So, definitely, I think we're even listening to some of them today, if I'm not mistaken, but I digress. So you've been known to weave organic elements like whale calls into your tracks. When you're out on the south coast of Australia, are you constantly sonic hunting? And what is the strangest or most difficult sound that you've ever tried to sample and turned into a beat?
Oh, this is a good one, because making this album, it's called Textures, so it's all about textures. All the songs where it come from using different textures. But there's one song on there called Croonery, where I made the beat entirely out of pencils.
Wow.
Not trying to be ultra clever or anything. I was just kind of lost in the moment, and I was looking around at my desk at the time thinking, what can I use? Like, what's sort of unconventional? So I got out a crappy mic and some pencils and pens and started drumming on different parts around my studio.
Uh-huh.
And that ended up becoming the beat to Croonery, which is kind of like this jazz song, I guess. Maybe not a totally original idea. I'm sure other producers have done it. But for me, this was, I didn't expect it to work. You know what I mean? Pencils, I think, is probably one of the strangest samples. I'm sure there are other ones in there. There's a lot of animal samples in these songs, as you know.
Yeah.
You know, the whale calls and things.
Yeah.
But I tried to think a little bit more laterally using what I've actually got at my house, because I don't have a whale, unfortunately.
Yeah, I just love that. It's because in our times that we're living, right, it's all so easy, arguably, to be, if you really want. I mean, you can go out and produce an album, your own samples within minutes via AI. So it's really cool that you're sort of going out there specifically to create your own organic real sounds and bringing that organic world into such a digital pure environment. It's very, very cool. And like, you know, I just love it when producers do this, because it's, you know, as I mentioned, you know, strange times we live in, you know, technology is rising up. We got everything at our, literally at our fingertips, and it's becoming much, much easier. And I worry sometimes it's going to like water it all right down. But here you are, you're out here and you're pushing it, and you're making beautiful stuff out of real things. So that's really cool.
I think, you know, this really touches to the, like the biggest topic of our time, I think, in the music scene, which is the inclusion of technology to the point that it erases the producer,
yep,
or the musician, you know? And I don't know how I feel about it, because some music that I hear, who said it? I forget who said it, but basically the point was that AI doesn't have a point of view.
Yeah.
And my other job is working with AI, and I can tell you it doesn't have a point of view.
True.
It can't. Just by its very nature, it cannot have a point of view.
Yeah, so it's going to be objective, eh? Like militantly, clinically, brutally objective. It will never, ever have its own opinion.
Yeah, like the best it can do is it can sound nice.
Yeah.
But I don't think it can sound beautiful. I don't think it's going to change your day or change how you feel about your week.
Yeah.
I don't, there's something missing there, and I think that's quite profound, and I can't tell you what it is that's missing, but it's missing. So I guess, like, I'm not totally opposed to using AI and things like that. I haven't done it yet. I don't know if I ever will. But I think the more that other artists are using that, you can kind of differentiate yourself by being purely human.
Yeah,
100%. And I think people resonate with that, yeah.
And it's definitely becoming a thing. You know, we're seeing lots of producers that are 100% doorless, right? Or, you know, and just like, no, I'm making all my own sounds. It's like 100% me, and that's it. And that's really cool. And it's I think that is going to push the envelope, because it has to, because you have to be creative, have to think outside the box, have to use your environment, have to layer and create and like produce these new things out of already existing things. So it's taking it back to the source, which is, it's going to be exciting. I'm very aligned with your thinking too, Mr. Cave Dweller. And like, yeah, I don't know. It's going to, you know, I don't want to see personally, and I'm not going to name names, but I think if you're in the scene and you know what I'm about to say, there's all this corporatized scene gazing, you know, that's all packaged and delivered, and it's all about influencers and being there and being seen and your followers, and it's become this corporate nothing, you know. So I worry, yeah, that these corporate nothing events, not naming names, are gonna become like these AI sort of producer influencer kind of things, these avatars of creativity, and it's just gonna be shallow and false and strung through and up with like weird algorithms and messages, you know, buy this subneurally, do you know what I mean? Like I get a bit dystopian on this, but
that is definitely a possible future,
yep,
that we face. You know, the logic stands, right? Like a lot of festivals, in my opinion, you know, people might not like what I say here, but a lot of festivals play it extremely safe.
Yep.
With you know, they were already just hiring the same acts repeatedly every year for the last decade,
mm-hmm,
because it sells, right? But people are almost already getting trained to this just total commodification of music. You know, they're not really being introduced to anything new.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think we run this risk that, AI is going to be cheaper, way cheaper to, like, hire than human beings, which has to travel,
yeah.
You know. And if the whole idea of a show is pretty laser lights and you don't even need a person anymore, which is what some people have already said about some of these festivals,
mm-hmm,
then... yeah, we do face that risk, but I do understand what you mean on the other side of things, is that I think we're going to see offshoots. I think we're going to see niche communities form around Organica.
Yeah.
Not necessarily just as a genre style, but like organic music in general.
Yeah.
I think,
yeah,
it's going to be us versus the robots.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, wow. That's a weird sort of like part, what is it, 29 of The Matrix. I might have to write that script when I get home. So producers often talk about the cave, and we have before as well. And it's that period of isolation where the world disappears. When you're deep in a session for a label like Subnautique or Raw Doggy Records, how do you know when a track has moved from just a good loop to something that actually has the power to shift a dance floor's energy. Oh my God, I tripped over that question. I'm so sorry.
No, I get it. Like, when do you know, right? When do you know when you've hit something? I won't necessarily use the word good, because that's subjective. But when you know that it's like ready to go and you want someone to hear it, for me, it's always a surprise. It's never intentional. So when I'm making music, if I automatically feel something, mm-hmm. It's usually an accident. Usually it's something, I just tried something, or I even made a mistake. I did something that I wasn't trying to do, and then I'm like, ooh. And I always say it. It's always in the song. I will say it out loud. I go, ooh. I'm like, oh, okay. Because I feel it in my gut.
Yeah.
And I think, especially with like electronic music, you want to feel it in your gut. Because yeah. That's how it's going to translate on the dance floor. So, yeah, it's usually when I feel something. And then really that dictates the rest of the song. Uh-huh. Around that feeling. So I'm like, oh, okay, so that's the feeling of the song. But I never know it in advance, which sometimes sucks, because you could spend days or weeks writing it and never get that feeling. And then in 10 seconds using pencils, you might be like, ooh, that's it.
Oh, damn it. I've just worked on this beat for 5 days. Damn it. Oh, yeah. I've just done this.
Oh, just on that point too, like as a little mention to other producers, I reckon if you're spending like weeks on a beat, it probably sucks.
Yeah.
Because the best stuff happens just kind of in the spur of the moment.
Yeah, it just flows. It just comes to you. There it is. And you're riding it. And it's like, it feels good. And, you know, it harkens back to what you're saying. And you feel it. But then you go, you slightly change it and it just feels off. And you just, I've lost it. And that's where you should drop it.
That's it. Like, if you start hurting the song, you got to step back and just give it away. Yeah. That's a really good point about overproducing. Just let it breathe, let it go. I love that feeling.
I love that feeling when you're in that moment. Of course I get it in a different way because I do different things, but when you know, right? And when you don't, you don't. And that's it. And that's a lesson that you have to rise up to. You have to work through to get to that place. And then when you're there, it feels so good. And then it's so fleeting and you can lose it within the blink of an eye. And it's like, oh man, I want to get back to that place. But the more that you do it, the more that you arrive at that place and the more it becomes like intentional, you know, it's like, well, you don't think about it and it's just like, oh, well, it's there. And that's a positive, pure way of creating, I think. You know,
I think it's a, you know, it's what the process you just described is quite profound too. It's like these transient moments of awakening.
Yeah.
I completely relate it to how you described that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
listen to Triple SD, he's got it.
Oh, well, I want to say I got it, but sometimes I might do. But you certainly do, and I know. And here's a question for this segue. So every artist hits a wall where the gear feels cold and the inspiration feels thin. Looking back at the making of the Liminal or the Seasons EPs, was there a track that almost didn't make it, one you fought with for months before it finally broke open?
Yeah. Liminal, the EP especially, was one I took a lot of risks on, because that is actually quite literally a cold EP. Mm-hmm. You know, in comparison to all my other music, which is quite warm and textural, this was something I made in a time where I wasn't necessarily very happy with the world.
Yeah.
And the sound that came across at that time was this almost bleak, urban, cement-like, like almost hip-hop tracks.
Uh-huh.
And there was a song in there called Give a Little, Change a Lot, mm-hmm. which that's really the message of the song. It's about giving, but it came from this sort of dark place, and I did original vocals on that for the first time ever, again, just with a crappy microphone in my studio, you know, no proper equipment, just really raw. And before we put this out with Raw Doggy Records, I was like, I don't know if I want to go ahead with it.
Uh-huh.
So I felt so vulnerable. like putting my actual point of view across and like my actual voice. But by doing that, surprisingly, that song has remained in like the top three songs for me. It still is. For some reason, people really connected with it. Huh. So even though I wrestled with it, I'm just very happy that in the end I decided to be vulnerable and just go, well, let's see.
Maybe that's why people resonate so much, because you were so vulnerable. You know, you were so speaking of a subjective moment of absolute, pure, unbridled truth. You know, and that creation. So, and I know the tune. I know the tune that you're talking about. And you're absolutely correct. It's absolutely brooding and dark, but it's transcendent and uplifting at the same time. So maybe that's what people,
I appreciate that.
Maybe that's what people are finding from it. And that's the power of art. And that's one of the things I love about your tunes, because, you know, they always weave a story. There's always multiple narratives going on and little hooks that you can get into. And, like, you know, you can feel literally on a day, you know, you wake up in the morning and, like, it's one of those days, man. You know, without directly quoting Limp Bizkit, it's one of those days where everything sucks, right? And you know it. You know it. So you listen to the tune. I listen to music all day, every day, and it's like, this hits differently today. And it's kind of like, okay, cool, I get it. Like, it's your subjective, you're calling out into the void from that vulnerable place months, years later, is calling to someone else. And that's beautiful. And that's something that is consistent with your tunes. Consistent.
That's beautiful, man. Like, that's such a nice, just a nice thought too, because as artists we put things into the world never knowing if it'll land or when it will land.
And
I think you raise a good point. Like, something you put out in the moment might appeal to someone 2 years later, or three
absolutely.
Years later, or, you know, some songs that have become viral 10, 20 years later,
absolutely.
Because it resonates with the people of the time. So yeah, that's an important thing you said. And just on that aspect of vulnerability too, I just wanted to give a shout out to the people that have you listen to my releases recently, because I've started doing my original vocals more. And again, with this album Textures, the song that's performing the best is the one I do vocals on. And that's blowing my mind, because I'm not a singer. And I'm not even trying to be, you know what I mean? But for some reason, or maybe the reason you just said, that honesty or something is connecting with people. And I think in electronic music, especially when vocals are usually pristine, you know, super polished, pop sort of style.
Yeah.
And then you've got me, who comes from like a rock and metal background, just kind of like growling in the microphone.
Well, it makes sense.
I don't know. People like it. So I think my next album, I'm saying it now, all original vocals.
Okay.
That's my
claim. You heard it here first. So you've mentioned that performing at festivals like Rainbow Serpent is a major dream for you. If you are closing out the stage at 4 a.m. surrounded by the Australian bush, what is one specific emotion or message you want the crowd to take home when the music finally stops?
Yeah, this one's hard to describe in words, but it's a feeling I like to have at the end of a transformational music festival, or really any sort of music event, is this moment of expansion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know when you have it. It's almost like this, like, you don't need to be on any substances to experience it. It's kind of like this, you expand outside of your body, and it's like this ultimate feeling of release.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, music is the only thing that's been able to do that to me, both in making it and in presenting it and listening to it. So if we're at 4 a.m., you know, just before the sun's about to come up, you know, I'd want to look out to the dance floor and see people not necessarily even dancing, but just in their moment, just letting go for a second. I don't know how else to describe it, so I just say expansion.
I totally get what you mean, 100%.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that we are all pushing for and walking towards every single time, whether we know it or not, you know. I mean, you can go, let's go out and like get completely ripped on, you know, three bags tonight, and like, you know, reach for the lasers and dig for the bass. And of course, you're going to find that expansion eventually. You know? Yeah. And when it comes in those moments, it's actually way too big, I think. So you know, when it comes, yeah, when you're not in that moment and you're just powered on the vibe, it's more beneficial. Not badly, both of those types of expansion are good. However,
yeah,
one is better than, sure, the other, really, in the long term, you know, so...
I can think of a specific example where I think I first felt it, right? Because, you know, like everyone else, in my first festival days, you know, it's about experimenting with all different things, and that's fine, you know, that's part of a person's journey. But I remember the first time I saw Spongle,
nice,
I was having a sober day. I challenged myself to have a sober day just, uh-huh, to see what that was like, you know, uh-huh, because it was a different thing for me. And friggin' hell, man. Like, seeing Spongle when it was just starting to rain, ooh, was like expansion.
That's expansion, yeah, right there. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Spongle are completely off the hook. If you haven't seen them, go see them. If you haven't listened,
yeah,
go listen. They're epic. Epic. So in a world where music is becoming increasingly digital and automated, your work feels stubbornly human and rooted in nature. 20 years from now, when someone unearths a cave dweller discography, what do you want them to understand about this specific era of Australian electronic music?
Wow, that's a good question, because I think what we're seeing in Australia... Well, what I want someone to understand about this specific era of Australian electronic music is we're only just seeing the beginning of the type of scene that I am in.
Yeah.
It's such a small, isolated scene, this sort of experimental, deeply organic type music. While it's big overseas, Australia's scene, like I think I know everyone in the scene. Like, across the country, I could be wrong, but I think I know and am personally friends with the scene, you know. Wow. There are so few of us doing this in Australia, and festivals aren't really prepared yet to take a risk on this type of music,
yeah,
because it is quite different. So we haven't really broken into the festival scenes, no matter how much we try. So I think if someone was to, you know, understand this specific era of Australian electronic music, is... understand that this is the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, this you're not looking at this midway through or at the end. Like, this is really the roots of what will come. Yeah.
Okay, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Finally, let us descend into the ultimate metaphysical abyss of the culinary arts. If the vibrations of the universe were a kitchen and your entire sonic legacy was baked into a single transcendent pastry, if your sound was a pie, what flavor would it be, and what does that choice reveal about the cosmic truth of your existence?
Yeah, look, I guess philosophically, I'm very interested in the idea of no self. So I would probably say no pie.
Nice.
Yeah, you know, I'd probably question the existence of the pie itself, if I'm being completely honest, because even the concept of no pie seems paradoxical. So I think I could think about that for until the end of time.
Nice.
So no pie.
Wow. Oh, sorry, I'm crying. That pie question was just off the hook. But, yo, like, look, mate, we go way back, and I know how we roll. So, Casey, like, you know, you are just a true bad man. You know, thank you so much again for coming on and treating us, humble listeners, to your magnificent transcendental art and beauty and vibes. It's been my absolute pleasure. Have an amazing week.
I appreciate you. Thank you, Triple SD, for having me on. It's been a blast chatting with you again, man, and hopefully we can again in the future.
Oh, we will. Have a good one, man.
Thank you.
ain't it fine? Ain't it fine? Living in the real world. Ain't it good? Ain't it good? Being all alone. Ain't it fine? Living in the real world. 'Cause the world don't hold me on. Ain't it good?
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.